When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Simzak.
Snap out of it!
I'm gonna go to Disney World!
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
All right, folks, welcome back to another exciting edition of the Decibel Geek Podcast. I am Aaron Camaro. Joining me in the broadcast booth, as always, my good friend Chris Zinzak.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing good. It's been a busy last couple of weeks for us.
Yeah, it has. But it's been a lot of fun, too.
And you got your voice back.
I feel new and improved.
Puberty is over.
I got three of them now. I'll show you later.
Awesome. Well, as you probably noticed from the intro clip today, we are going to go back in time again. But we've got a few new things to take care of before we hit the flux capacitor.
Man, I got to say, you did a heck of a job with that Ricky Rackman interview
last week, man.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had a lot of good feedback on that. And Ricky retweeted it and was nice enough. And I also tweeted Fred Corey about the cupcake incident, mentioned that it was on there, and he retweeted that. So Fred Corey, Cinderella, thank you for spreading the word. And yeah, numbers have been way up for the last couple episodes, so yeah, we appreciate all of you that are new to the show, all those regular listeners, and you've been great to us.
And Ricky Rackman, thanks for turning me on to the old Chico stick. Those things are pretty tasty. I never had one before in my life.
The ultimate unpaid spokesman
nice.
For a product. Go ahead and get Geek of the Week out of the way. Geek of the Week this week is a guy named Jimmy Betterton. Can't find a better tune. No,
but we found one. He's the Geek of the Week.
We did. Yeah, he just joined the Facebook.com/Decibel Geek page recently, and had a nice comment about the Ricky Rackman episode. Said you guys are killing it. Love the show.
Yes, we are.
So appreciate that, Jimmy. Enjoy your Monopoly money. It's on its way, and the prestige of being Geek of the Week,
and then the honor and the glory. Yes.
Well, let's not oversell it. There's no money.
But there's plenty of glory.
That's right. If you're listening to us on Friday night, it's about 7 o'clock Eastern on MaximumThreshold.net. Welcome to the show. Love the Maximum Threshold guys. Thanks for coming on. And subscribe to us on iTunes. That way you never miss an episode. You can listen to back episodes also. Hear a new one whenever it comes out.
Yeah, we're up to, what, 40-something now, huh?
Yeah, this is 46, I think.
I was talking to a guy the other day, and he was like, oh, man, I really need to check out your show. And I was like, well, you know, there's 40-some to choose from. Just go back and hit the archives. It's on iTunes. It's free. So, you know, got to warn you, once you listen to one, you're going to be hooked and go back and listen to the rest. And I was right. He did.
And we started doing the weekly thing back in January, and we've held true to it all year. I'm pretty proud of that. So for a couple of slackers, we're doing good.
Yeah, not bad.
One last thing. Dick Wagner, friend of the show, who ex-Alice Cooper guitar player, among many other things, the hardcover version of his book, Not Only Women Bleed, is now available. And Dick's lovely assistant, Susie, was nice enough to send me and Aaron both copies of the book. So
that
I'm
is
very
awesome.
Appreciative of that.
So you guys are lucky to have a show tonight, because I really want to be going and reading this thing right now.
Yeah, and if you want to get a copy of that book, go to notonlywomenbleed.com. And also, they took the audio from our conversation with Dick, and they made it into like this enhanced video slideshow video clip presentation thing from a YouTube video.
It's pretty awesome. I'm really flattered by that.
I am too. So thank you, Dick, for doing that, and check that out at notonlywomenbleed.com.
Don't forget, this book comes with audio CDs, you know, with some good music on there too. So you're not just getting the book, you're getting some music to go along with it as well. And don't forget our interview with Dick Wagner, back in the archives.
Yep.
Go check it out anytime you want for free.
That book is definitely worth your money for sure. Guess we need to get on with the back in time thing, don't we?
Yeah, we need to fire up the DeLorean, get the flux capacitor all set up, and get your Casio keyboards ready. We're going back to 1987. Now, in the process of doing my homework for this one, Chris, I've come to find out, you know, and, you know, I was there. I was a young guy, but I was there. And 87 was a carefree, fun-loving time. There wasn't really a lot of hostility in the world. You know, there wasn't wars going on. None of this stuff. It was all pretty easy going, I think.
Yeah, the extent of the war was really the Cold War at the time with the U.S. and Russia and all that. And we'll get into a little bit of that later.
If you didn't live in Southeast Asia, you had it pretty good in 87.
Pretty good. I mean, and it was we heard the Gordon Gekko clip at the beginning from the movie Wall Street. You know, there was the whole greed is good era. Wall Street was exploding, and it was a very self-centered era for America, for sure, but it was prosperous. You know, there was money to be made back in those days, from what I remember. Of course, I was 11 and you were, what, 13?
Yeah, about that.
Around that. So, it was a good time, you know. And 87, we were discussing off mic before the show, it was fun memories going back and researching this year. But a couple of stats for this. Average cost of a new house in 1987 was $92,000. Average income was $24,350.
See, and that doesn't seem like much at all to by today's comparison. That's the inflation and the cost of living and everything. And, you know, it struck me as funny, and I know this isn't a political show, and I'm not going to do a whole lot of political stuff, but 87, for as carefree as it was, if you look back in history from like a political kind of a standpoint, a historical standpoint, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes in the government in 87 that set up a lot of the hard times for us today. A lot of shady stuff going on back in the 80s that nobody knew about until much later on when it came back to bite us all in the ass.
Yeah, everyone was busy having a good time back in those days.
Yeah, you know, why look at that? You know, we're over here partying. It's 87.
And the cost,
hand me that Aquanet. Let's party.
Yeah, Aquanet. And the cost of a Super Bowl ad was a paltry $600,000.
Wow.
Also in 1987, Sammy Hagar won in 1987.
Yes, he did.
The reason being, the speed limit was increased to 65 miles per hour. So,
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to give this guy speeding tickets for the rest of his life? No. You know, when Sammy Hagar says, I can't drive 55, you say, let's raise the speed limit to 65 then.
So the head of the head of the Department of Transportation was obviously a Sammy Hagar.
Obviously.
Fan. All right, well, we have a lot of music to get to, and this I'll go ahead and state, this is going to be a two-week thing. It's going to be a two-part episode.
Yeah, we're going to have to. There's just, you know, and I think it's fair because when we started doing these year in reviews, you know, we used to crunch them into one episode, and I think every single year is worthy of two. Just because 9 times out of 10, there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the year, and we want to cover it all and give you a good retrospective in retro of the year we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. So we want to get on with we're going to do this in chronological order. January, the Beastie Boys became the first act to be censored by American Bandstand. Now, I tried to research this. I can't find out what it is that was so controversial that they had to be censored.
I don't know either, but I'm guessing, based on the Beastie Boys in 87, it was probably their lyrics.
I guess so, but I can't remember anything super offensive. Although, you know, back in the day, things were taken much differently.
Autographed pictures and classy hoes.
Or Mom Threw Away Your Best Porno Mag. Maybe that could have been it. I don't know.
MCA's in the back because he's skeezing with a hoe.
Wow.
We're busting him out tonight, huh?
A band that had been around for quite a while in 1987, Deep Purple, put out an album called House of Blue Light, and you picked a song off of this one, and we need to discuss this.
You know, and I said, I just only heard this for the first time just recently as we were checking this out. When this album came out, Deep Purple, you know, you got to remember it's 87. These guys have been around forever at this point. Mm-hmm. But with this album, they're kind of going with the flow with, you know, keyboards in rock bands are very popular at this time with, you know, the explosion of Bon Jovi and everything else. And, you know, these guys were already built in with one of the best keyboard players to ever, you know, tickle the keys, I suppose.
John Lord, recently passed away.
This album was a little weird for Deep Purple, but there's this one track on there that, you know, and I didn't even get to listen to the whole thing. I heard the iTunes clip, and I'm going to go back and buy it because it's such a great tune, but like I called Chris and said, man, you got to play this song. It's really cool from what I could hear of it. I'd love to hear the rest of it. And you already knew what it was.
Okay. It cracks me up that you didn't know what the subject matter of this song was or what made Mitzi Dupree famous.
Yeah, see, the thing was, the only like thing that really stood out to me when I listened to it briefly was, I've always wanted a girl with a name like Mitzi Dupree. What a cool line that is, you know? Yeah,
but...
it is a cool name.
Some of the other lyrics, and I'll play another other part of the lyrics here in a second, but part of the lyrics is, I am Mitzi, the queen of the ping pong. Where are you going, boy? He said, I'm nowhere. She said, I'm moving on. This song is about a woman who has a special talent.
Ah.
She can do amazing things with a ping pong and not with her arms or hands.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
I think I get you here.
Okay. So
that makes me like this song even more. Why don't you give the listeners a little taste of this? This is Mitzi Dupree from 1987, Deep Purple, off their album House of Blue Light. Now I get it.
Do you think she hooked up with Forrest Gump?
Maybe.
Lieutenant Dane. I met this strange lady, Lieutenant Dane.
She could do amazing things with ping pong balls, Lieutenant Dane.
Oh, run, Forrest.
Run away.
All right.
Mitzi Dupree.
Another album released in January 87, The Return of Bruno by Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was a pretty big star back then. You know,
not big enough for that album.
No.
Didn't do too well.
It seems like actors, you know, always try to, like, branch out into music, but it rarely doesn't work.
Except for Don Johnson. His album was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And another one of the biggest selling albums of 87. Don't forget Patrick Swayze. Huh?
Oh, God. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
That mess was huge.
Well, one album that definitely was huge, as we played at the beginning, was the Bon Jovi Living on a Prayer, was the number one biggest hit song worldwide that year.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. It was huge.
That video was on every 5 minutes. And so now we're going to move into February. Manowar released Fighting the World, and that was really the only notable release I had in there other than a lot of pop stuff. The year heated up with rock stuff as it went on further.
Manowar had that song off there, and I think it was sort of a minor hit. It was that, what's the name of that song? Oh, no, I'm drawing a blank now.
Don't go to me asking a Manowar question. I'm sorry.
Blow Your Speakers. That's what it's called. You ever heard that?
Blow Your Speakers. I thought you were going to say something.
It's rock and roll. Yeah. No. They used to play that on the radio once in a while. It's not a bad tune.
Blinded by the Loincloth.
It's a little bit different than what you're used to with them. But Manowar is all right with me. But you know what? I hate Bon Jovi. I hate Bon Jovi. And it's probably, the roots of it probably goes back to 1987. Because that would have put me right about in the sixth grade. And we had a teacher, and the guy was a dick. You know, he was just a jerk. And he was, like, really nice to the pretty girls.
Yeah.
But just a dick to everybody else,
you
know, to the rest of us.
But wouldn't you be if you were the teacher?
No. I'd be hanging out with the cool kids that bring in their Kiss records to school in 1987.
Yeah, not too many of those.
But this guy, like, he would take and he would split us in half. He would segregate us basically to what he thought were the good kids and the dumb kids. And, of course, I was in with my buddies in the dumb group. So he said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to allow you guys to name yourselves, name your own little groups that you're in.
Yeah.
We're like, all right, cool. You know, we're thinking all this cool stuff. Well, the catch is he's going to let the girls name their group. Mm-hmm. He's also going to let them name our group. So now they get to pick the names for both. So they are the Bon Jovis.
Okay.
You know, that tells you it's 87. You know, this is huge. You know,
right.
All the young girls are screaming their heads off for Bon Jovi. You know what they named us?
What?
the Pee-wee Hermans. So maybe, other than, you know, the blistering keyboard solos, but other than that, that's probably the root of my Bon Jovi hatred. Oh, that's a true story. Isn't that awful?
It is awful.
I'm glad he didn't do that. With the girl said, we want to be the Ace Frehleys. You know, like, yeah. Oh, I hate that guy.
Who? Moving into March, March 9th, U2 released The Joshua Tree. Duh. Now, definitely not a band we usually play on the show, but I will say that album was humongous. And I remember when I was a kid, I think it was around the year that came out, we were everywhere we drove, somebody, there was a mad crazy nerd going around with a spray paint can, spray painting U2 on everything. Stop signs, rocks, walls. And it was like, you know, you're in suburban. In a suburban area, when that's the graffiti, is
you
too.
You got to catch
and not
the guy.
Gang symbols.
Catch the guy, beat his ass, and then make him go back and spray paint anthrax over the top of everything.
Joshua Tree would go on to sell over 14 million copies worldwide in 1987 alone.
Jeez.
And they also, as a lot of people will remember, they shot a rooftop music video for Where the Streets Have No Name in Los Angeles. That was right. A big video that year. In the U.S., in March 13th, Bryan Adams' Heat of the Night became the first single to be released on cassette. Cassette singles became known as cassingles. Do you remember cassingles?
I sure do remember cassingles.
They were little cardboard things, and they wouldn't protect your tape for shit.
No, they'd get all buffed up around the edges, all scuffed and everything.
Then the tape would come loose, and then you would need a pencil.
That's right, to tighten it back up.
You younger people have no idea what we're talking about.
Spin it with the pencil on the other. That's right.
And then
I always liked cassingles because you could get them, and every once in a while I remember... there was a Poison one. I don't remember what the single was, but the B-side was like an unreleased song. It was like Living for the Minute or something.
Right.
And it was like, man, that's a great song. Or maybe it was Face the Hangman. It was one of the two.
Yeah.
But it was like a great song. And it's like, why didn't this make the album? But that's what made singles cool.
Yeah,
was
you could get the unreleased stuff. Yeah. That's like the B-sides, which you don't get that anymore unless you can do it digitally now. But it was different back then. But so, yeah, cassingles, which cassettes gone off the market now.
As if cassettes weren't bad enough, then there were cassingles.
Yeah, and another big event, this is back, you know, you're still in the wrestling thing now. I'm not really a wrestling fan now, but back when I was a wrestling fan, I remember watching WrestleMania 3 on March 29th at the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, outside Detroit.
That's right. How couldn't you be a wrestling fan in 1987?
It was a big deal. Yeah, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant. Yeah. It was a true part of pop culture at that point.
Truly. You know, and the big deal with that was it was, like you said, the Pontiac Silverdome in Detroit, and they set an indoor attendance record that I didn't even know this. That attendance record stood until 2010.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge.
You know, so there was a huge
crowd there. People.
I'd love to get some attendance like that going at one of these Crossfire wrestling shows I work at. That would be something.
You're almost there.
Yeah, we're getting there little by little.
But the NBA All-Star Game in 2010 broke that record. I can't believe the NBA broke anything like that. Because, I mean, does anyone watch basketball anymore? I don't know. I just don't. I don't give a shit about it anymore.
People ask me, you know, do you watch basketball? I say, yeah, when the Bucks are doing good. So, no, not
no,
really.
No, you don't watch it at all. Same with me with the Atlanta Hawks. But March, other releases, Gary Moore released Wild Frontier. If you don't know Gary Moore, is great European guitar player. Played with the original Skid Row from the 60s. There was a lawsuit recently brought up about that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd always wondered about that.
There was a Skid Row back in the 60s.
Right.
And then also played with Thin Lizzy for a while, but did a lot of solo work, worked with a lot of people. Actually, tragically died of a heart attack just this past year. On the 19th of March, Ozzy Osbourne and Randy Rhoads' tribute album came out. And a lot of people remember from 87 the Crazy Train video that got released from that album kind of reinvigorated the Ozzy back catalog. Because I remember on Headbangers Ball, they would play the hell out of that video. And Ozzy had just the ridiculous hairstyle.
I was
going to
say, what was up with that guy's hair back
then? He looked like, I think I've heard somebody, I think it was the guy from Raven on the Metal Evolution series talking about how Ozzy looked like Shelley Winters back then. I have to agree. I think that's about as spot on as it gets.
Well, and I remember too, because when I was younger, I had an uncle that had a whole bunch of Hit Parader magazines. And around, I'd say 85, 86, around in this time, kind of, there was a lot of pictures in there with Ozzy Osbourne with his head shaved bald.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if he had long hair. I wonder if he shaved his head bald, and then that's the result of it growing back. You know, we're going to do the best we can with it for this video.
It's pretty sad. But
we want you to, he let Sharon do his hair. And so she did it exactly the way she would.
Oh, God.
Look at him. He's got Sharon hair in that video.
Isn't that scary? Yeah, it is. Thanks for giving me that metal
image. Never occurred to me till now, but yeah, he looks just like Sharon Osbourne in that video.
But that video did serve a great purpose, as in, you know, back when I discovered that, that was my introduction to Crazy Train, was because, you know, I was about 11 years old when that video came out, and I wasn't into rock and metal when the original Crazy Train came out. So I was too young for it. I was listening to Michael Jackson and shit. Yeah. So that was what got me into the whole Randy Rhoads thing. So it was a gateway. So I appreciate that.
And what a killer live album. Probably one of the best ever.
We need to do a live album episode one of these
days. We've been talking about that. Should.
Another great record that was released that year was Anthrax's Among the Living album.
Yes. I've been listening to that CD all day long today.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And that whole thing is killer.
Been trying to think of a song to play off of that one. And, it's hard to pick one. This was the third studio album the band released. They released it on Megaforce/Island Records, certified gold. It was produced by Eddie Kramer. A lot of people don't realize that. Famous for Zeppelin and Kiss, of course, Hendrix. It was hard to pick a song because, you know, there's I Am the Law, there's Indians, there's a lot of good songs on
NFL
here.
NFL is really good.
A lot of people wonder about the cover of this album. Like, there's some people that say that the old man on the album is the Reverend Henry Kane from the Poltergeist movies. And then there's also people that say he represents the Randall Flagg character that pops up in Stephen King novels all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know that there's ever been any clarification on that.
We'll have to get these guys on the Decibel Geek podcast and ask them sometime.
I would so love to get Anthrax on our show.
Our luck, we'd forget to ask.
Probably.
If we get Anthrax on the show, somebody remind us to ask them about that.
What'd you eat for breakfast?
We're not one of those other podcasts. Yeah. We don't do that
shit. We want to know other stuff. But so I decided to just go with the title track. So, you know, here's a little bit of that.
Thoughts with Paul Stanley.
There's nothing better than hearing a woman squeal.
Want to be a member of the Decibel Geek Army?
You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
Join us on our fan page at facebook.com/decibelgeek.
In the 8,000-mile One Lap of America rally, the same dependable Yugo you rely on every day beat 40 competitors, including Honda, Nissan, Porsche.
Aaron, did you get your Jell-O pudding pops?
Huxtable Mania running wild.
How could we talk about 87 and not talk about the Cosby Show?
Oh, man, this was huge.
Thursday nights, everyone watched the Cosby Show, and then I think Cheers came on right after it.
I liked Cheers better.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Cheers was funny. It was funny, though. There was an interesting dynamic there between the two episodes. We were definitely going, God, this is going to sound too political, and this is probably going to get me in trouble, but we go from a show with successful, responsible black people.
Right.
Followed by a show of worthless loser white people hanging around getting
hanging
drunk at
a bar.
Yeah. Maybe intentional. But yeah, the Cosby Show was a big TV show that year. And then there was a lot of interesting, there was the big movies of the year. We had Three Men and a Baby. We had Fatal Attraction, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Good Morning Vietnam, Lethal Weapon, Wall Street, as we played earlier in the show. Dirty Dancing, nobody puts Baby in a corner. RoboCop.
I love that movie, RoboCop.
Moonstruck, which you heard a clip from at the beginning. And then Less Than Zero came out this year. And you know, you've got something to discuss
before
on
we go too far into that. There's one movie on here that probably didn't make like the top 10 of the best-selling movies of that year, but it was one of my all-time favorites. The first Predator movie.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Predator.
That was killer. RoboCop and Predator, man. I was all about that stuff.
I think
in 87.
RoboCop is going to get remade.
Yeah.
Just like every other damn movie.
They should do a RoboCop versus the Predator. They should do everybody versus the Predator at some point.
Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers
Batman.
Versus Predator.
Yeah,
Batman.
All of them. They did a Batman versus Predator comic book that must have came out probably, you know, back in the early 90s. And it was just killer.
Really
a good read. And I always thought, man, this would make such a killer movie.
Wow.
But everything with them Predators, just, man, something about that. That's first movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse the Body Ventura.
He was great in that movie.
Yeah, he was really good in it. And just, you know, one of my all-time favorite movies. That first Predator is just killer.
Very cool. So, Less Than Zero. This is an interesting pick you made. Go ahead and explain this.
Well, and it's off the Less Than Zero soundtrack. Okay movie. You know, it wasn't bad.
Was it Robert Downey Jr., right?
I think so,
or he plays
a
bad drug addict or something.
Yeah.
Poison did Rock and Roll All Night for this soundtrack.
Poison is Rock and Roll All Night on it. Danzig is on there.
Really?
Let's see. The Bangles do a pretty cool cover of Hazy Shade of Winter, but they rock it out. It's actually, you're hearing me say it, the Bangles did a really cool song.
This isn't
on their
father's Simon and Garfunkel.
Right. It is the Bangles. And they're not walking like Egyptians no more.
You know you're light rock when the Bangles rock up one of your songs.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. But my favorite song by far, and Aerosmith's on there too.
Really?
Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Blues.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a really good soundtrack. A lot of different things on there, but a lot of good songs. My personal favorite off of that one, when I used to work on radio and people would call up and request Slayer, you know, and I was the guy that would actually play the songs, get in big trouble for it, but I play the songs. When people call and request Slayer all the time, it's like, yeah, I'm sure they're going, this guy can't play Slayer. He'll get killed if he plays Slayer. But I had an ace in my sleeve.
Uh-huh.
It was the Less Than Zero soundtrack, because as you're about to find out, Slayer does a pretty interesting cover on there. Crank this one up. It's In a Gata De Vida.
Well, Aaron, I'm glad you're a fan of that song, but apparently Slayer themselves are not fans of that song.
No?
No. I did some research on this, and Rick Rubin, it was his insistence on them cutting this song for this soundtrack.
Wow.
He wanted them to do a cover of this. It was obviously the original by Iron Butterfly. And if you didn't know, In a Gata De Vida really means In the Garden of Eden.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
But the band was not happy about the final product, with Jeff Hanneman deeming it a poor representation of Slayer, and Kerry King eloquently labeling it a hunk of shit.
Well, you know, it's not really a good representation of Slayer. However, it's a pretty damn cool version of In a Gata De Vida.
Well, and Rick Rubin, you know, there was a method to his madness. It was one of their first songs to really get any radio airplay.
Right, because it's the only Slayer song you can get away with playing on the radio.
Yeah. You're not going to hear God Hates Us All on the pop station.
Right.
So, but yeah, that's an interesting track. I had never heard it before until we put this one together. So,
you know, play a little South of Heaven or Rain in Blood or something like that on your local rock station?
Probably not.
Probably not.
No. So we're now into April, and hard to believe that the Simpsons cartoon first appeared as a series of shorts on the Tracey Ullman Show in April of 1987.
Yeah, that's pretty cool how that all worked out.
Today.
And it's still on today. You know, started out as just like a little comic strip within another show before it. People must have just dug it so much that they said, we got to give these guys their full-on show.
And they looked different back then, too. The artwork was a tad bit different. But the Cult also released an album called Electric that year. Now, you picked a song off of there, right?
Yeah, that's a great album, too. I really like that one. Before we get too far talking about TV, kind of the roots of reality TV kind of starts in 87 with two great shows that I always watched when I was a kid and loved it. Rescue 911.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Unsolved Mysteries. Back to the Cult. Yeah. 1987, this one comes off Electric. This was a killer album through and through. It was hard to pick a song off it, but this one's one of my personal favorites. Crank this one up. It's called Aphrodisiac Jacket. You know, that's one thing I've always liked about the Cult, the fact that, you know, they've been around for a long, long time now, but they've never really changed their tune. They're always the Cult, you know, there's no mistaking when you listen to them. Even today, the new stuff they're coming out with, it's still without a doubt the Cult, you know. And this one here, a few years from now, they'd come out with Sonic Temple.
Yeah, and, I love that record.
You know, reach the top of the rock worlds, but pretty much every Cult album is pretty good.
Yeah, another good.
I recommend any one of them.
Another good tune on that album is Love Removal Machine. I've always liked that one, too.
But, they got a song on there. Is it Peace Dog? That's got a killer riff to it, too. And Outlaw, that's pretty awesome. Memphis Hip Shake.
Yeah, both that and Sonic Temple. If you want good Cult stuff, get those two records.
Yeah, those would probably be the best representations of the band.
Yeah, I would agree. Also in April, TNT released Tell No Tales, which is a pretty good record. One album, probably one of the most memorable albums for me from 87 was the self-titled Whitesnake album. And
see, I never really got into Whitesnake all that much. Yeah,
this one, of course, you know, you got to take it from my point of view from that era. Was I dove headfirst into the overindulgent guitar shredding, just lot heavy guitar stuff, and I like melody, so this was as perfect.
Yeah, Whitesnake has got all that for sure.
Well, it's funny because if you go back and listen to the older Whitesnake stuff, completely different, much more blues oriented. This is when they got John Sykes into the group.
Isn't that kind of the story where they were, you know, big in Europe and they were this rock, blues rock band, kind of along the veins of Deep Purple, which David Coverdale used to front them. Was in Deep Purple,
right?
And then I think if I've got my facts right, I think the story is like when they were coming to America and they were ready to take over the States, the record company or whoever pretty much made Coverdale fire the entire band and hired a bunch of pretty boys.
Oh, was that what happened?
And then replaced the original band, and then that's what you got in the 80s was that version, the video MTV era Whitesnake.
Yeah, it was
with the big hair and the spinning around and the dancing and all that good stuff.
This album was freaking
hot girls
huge.
In the videos.
But, oh, yeah, Tawny Kitaen, how could you?
Man, she was smoking back then.
Yeah.
I don't know what I want to touch her nowadays or anything, but she was smoking back then.
Careful, she's on my Facebook friends.
We love you. We would touch you anytime. Come on the show.
That'd be great if she listened to the show.
That'd be cool if she come on the show.
But, yeah, people know
she'd make fun of us.
Well, people know the big hits from the album, you know, Still of the Night, Here I Go Again,
right.
Is This Love, which was the power ballad, which, ugh.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the record, but that's not one
Talk
song
about
I
like. Casio Overkill.
Yeah, way too much keyboard on that. But, you know, they had a good lineup. They had Coverdale, John Sykes on guitar, Neil Murray on bass, Ainsley Dunbar on drums. Adrian Vandenberg did some guitar soloing on the album also, Vivian Campbell. So there was, I mean, there was a lot of personnel on here. It was a created in the studio album because the touring lineup wound up not being that because Coverdale and Sykes could not get along.
Yeah.
But they created some pretty good tunes in the studio, and this was my pick off there. This is Bad Boys off of the self-titled Whitesnake album.
You know me, I'm
It's like a shredding Whitesnake song.
Yeah.
I like that. That's pretty cool.
Oh, well, sorry, a little technical difficulty there in my
ouch,
editing.
Ouch, my ear.
Didn't mean to blow your ears out there. But yeah, that album went on to sell 8 million copies.
Wow.
A big, big album. And I had that one on cassette.
All based on Tawny Kitaen's ass.
Yeah, well, hey.
What a sweet ass it was.
Go with what works. But yeah, so the
that's marketing right yeah. there.
So we're going to move into May now. In
if
May,
I buy this album and I grow my hair like David Coverdale, they will come dance on my Pinto.
You have a Pinto?
In 87, I might have.
I don't know. I don't know if you want to dance on a Pinto. It might explode.
Yeah, no kidding. You stand on it.
Yeah.
Blows up.
In May, Motley Crue releases Girls, Girls, Girls.
Love that album.
Huge album. Heart released Bad Animals. Big return to form for them. You know, definitely different than their 70s stuff. Ron right. Nevison came on board and gave them a hit.
Turned them into kind of pop icons yeah. that they remain to be today.
They made a lot of money off that record.
I like Heart's early stuff.
I like all of it. I mean, I like both eras. I think there's good in both. I mean, now obviously they were considered more cookie cutter,
right.
you know, in 87, but, you know, it got them
but
a lot
they
of money.
Still, but they still had the original formula of what they were, so they were kind of lending who we are to this kind of format.
And Ann Wilson just has an amazing voice.
Yeah.
So, but
on the keyboards. It's 1987.
Yeah. In June, our friends in Canada introduced a $1 coin nicknamed the Loonie.
That's right.
This is how deep we dug for research. For
that's
this
right,
show.
Because we got to throw a bone to our Canadian fans every single time, you know, and there's all kinds of cool stuff going on in Canada in 87 as well. But yeah. Hey, you know, you get your own dollar coin, the Loonie. It's
Loonie.
Popular. Everybody knows about that. Send your Loonies to the Decibel Geek Podcast.
Send your Loonies to the Loonies. June, YNT released Contagious.
I remember that album. That wasn't bad.
King Diamond released Abigail.
Yeah.
Sammy Hagar, who can now drive 65, released his self-titled album.
That's right. He can drive legally now.
Yep. Keel released the self-titled Keel album.
You know, and I went back and listened to that because I think I had that on album. Because for me, I remember I had a like specific dilemma in like around 87 where when I was younger, because it was different for me than you, I actually started listening to rock and stuff at probably way too young of an age.
Yeah, you beat me to the punch on that.
When I was a little kid, my Aunt Pam, my Uncle Bruce, they'd babysit me or whatever. And to keep me quiet and out of shit, they'd just set me down in front of the stereo and put on the headphones on me and start throwing on their albums. So I listened to all this stuff growing up.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, like you said, cassettes are coming out now, and you know, it's to the point now you want the cassette because you want to be able to carry it with you. It's
mm-hmm.
it made music portable.
Yeah.
Is what it did.
We didn't have iPods, we had Walkman.
And before that with an LP, it wasn't portable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could take it over to your friend's house and put it on their stereo, but you couldn't slap it in the Walkman like saying walk around or tape deck or
and
whatever.
Piracy began.
Right. Exactly, because then you could dub your albums, your other cassettes,
yep.
and pass them around to friends. That was huge.
All you
had
to do
then.
Is put scotch tape over the little hole in the top.
That's right. See all the things
you learned. Some of you listening right now know exactly
that.
What I'm talking about.
You remember that. But then you get to the point where, like, I'd been collecting the Kiss albums all these years, and I didn't want to screw up my collection
yeah.
by getting cassettes because, well, now I got all these albums.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a tough time for me, but eventually, you know, I kind of split it up half and half.
Yeah.
And I would just, you know, buy the album and dub it onto a cassette.
And 87 was yeah. also the year that you joined the Army, right?
That's right. I joined the Army, the Suicidal Army. Actually, back in 87, I didn't really listen to Suicidal. I mean, this was something I discovered later on. But 87 is a big year for thrash metal, you know,
yeah.
as we heard earlier with Anthrax, you know, and there's some other great bands that are thrash metal pioneers
mm-hmm.
coming out in 1987. Here's a band talking about the suicidal tendencies. These guys are definitely thrash metal, but they got a different element to them, too. They're kind of skate punk also.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll let you guys check it out for yourself. This one's one of my personal favorites. Off of Join the Army, 1987, this is The War Inside My Head.
Inside my head. Inside my head. Inside my head.
Love the album cover of that one.
It's a crazy album
cover. It is pretty cool. I always remember, like, Suicidal Tendencies was that band in the back of the Metal Edge magazine with, like, the craziest looking t-shirts.
Well, and their name alone. Their name was, like, everyone that was our age at that time were like, wow, what a cool name.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like a dangerous band. You know?
With a name like Suicidal Tendencies, it's like, if you brought that CD or well, no, not CD, but cassette tape or album home, you know, good chance your parents would say, like, worry about you.
Yeah, and join... You know, join
he's listening to the Suicidal Tendencies.
Join the Army, produced and engineered by Les Claypool.
Yeah, that's weird. I just, you
know...
Did
not know that.
I did not know that either. Is it the same Les Claypool?
I gotta think it is. I mean, and here's something... And this is me really being real geeky here. Guitar and vocals recorded at Baby O Studios. Baby O Studios is the same studio that Vinnie Vincent Invasion recorded their first album.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to believe those two albums came from the same...
Didn't they have a song called
Baby
O?
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure they wrote it at that studio, probably.
Yeah, speaking of killer guitar players, Rocky George, very underrated guitar player. Just shredding.
What is he up to now?
I don't know.
Is
he back in Suicidal now? I mean, Suicidal's back together. I know that.
I didn't know if he was still with them or not.
I know Robert Trujillo, I don't think. I think he's doing the Metallica thing now, so he's pretty busy.
Yeah.
As far as Suicidal Tendency goes, you know, they've got a ton of great albums. They came out with one where they went back after Robert Trujillo had joined the band, and they recut a lot of those original songs, like off them first couple albums.
Yeah.
It's called Still Psycho After All These Years. Recommended listening if you want to get into Suicidal Tendency.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, you got to check that out. It takes all them original versions and really makes them a lot cooler.
Very cool. Another album released, let's see, we're in June.
Yeah. Don't forget about your White Lion.
We were going to talk about this a little bit. White Lion released Pride, and there's a couple times I'm going to mention this. At 87, when we go back and listen to this stuff, I listen to what I was into at age 11, 12.
Right.
And now I like to think I've matured as my taste, or your taste changes as you get older.
Sure.
Now, there's still some of that stuff from back in those days that I still love. And the stuff that I'm not being critical of the stuff because I still like it, but it's amazing how things age well or don't age well according to your perspective.
Right.
And White Lion's Pride album is one of those cases, because, like, when that came out, I mean, Vito Bratta, I mean, you may not dig, you know, When the Children Cry because it's a cheesy song.
Right.
But no one can deny how talented, you know, Vito Bratta was as a guitar player.
Yeah, he was a pretty killer guitar player.
And, you know, we played their cover of Radar Love from a different album later on. You know,
that's good proof right there, yeah, how good they were.
Talented band, but, like, then you listen to When the Children Cry or listen to Wait.
Yeah.
You know, or stuff like that. And, like, it's like that
Little
stuff.
Fighter.
Yeah, Little Fighter. Those songs, is in the now as they seem then, it's like they were definitely written for that period.
Well, and I
there's
think
nothing timeless about
them. A lot of it's got to do with, you know, the cheesy keyboards.
Well,
from
but there wasn't
time.
Really too much keyboard on that stuff. But
yeah,
there was a lot of sanitized, you know, processed
slick
production,
you
which
know
we're going through again now with bands like
right
Nickelback, Seether, Theory of a Dead Man. As much as I hate to compare those bands to some of these 80s bands,
production
it's we're getting into the almost too perfect.
It's polished.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Rock and roll was never meant to be perfect.
No, rock and roll is meant to be dirty and mean and nasty, not...
It's
all
about
polished
emotion.
Up and shiny and nice.
Yeah, it's about emotion. It's about
right
aggression. It's not about making it perfect, which,
right,
I mean, there's an argument. Like, if you like Dream Theater, that's fine. But I think a lot of, like, the mainstream rock, we're getting that way again as we were. This is 87. This is right when the tide started shifting, as we'll discuss about a sleazy L.A. band that came out later. We'll discuss later on.
Oh, yeah.
But another album that came out that year by a band that was definitely not polished, and they had a good blues rock sound, was Great White, which
we've
talked
about. Friend.
Jack Russell.
Yeah.
It's too bad things are the way they are now, but...
Yeah, because if you go back to this album in 1987, this is pretty killer stuff. I mean, the whole album's really good, and it's 87, so they still got their share of love ballads and stuff on there.
Yeah.
But the thing with Great White is that, you know, even the songs that are considered, like, their ballads are still really blues-based and still, like, heavy in emotion.
Yeah.
You know, the way Jack Russell sings it, it's like song, for example, let's say, what's the ballad on that one?
Oh, Save Your Love.
Save Your
That's
Love.
That's the big ballad.
But listen to the way that guy sings it. I mean,
there's
it's
a Zeppelin
it's so
vibe.
Yeah, it's so heavy with the blues, like a Zeppelin-type song.
Yeah.
And the way he sings it, I mean, you can tell this guy is just putting everything he's got into that vocal, and it shows.
Yeah, they transcended the cheesiness of a lot of that stuff from back
then. Right.
So, yeah, we're
talking
about...
they still, I mean, they were able to collect on the big hits and stuff back then, but I think Ray White did it their own way, and I'll give them kudos for that.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Once Bitten album. This is before Twice Shy came out, before the Once Bitten, Twice Shy really launched them into success. But they did get a little bit of attention with this next track. This is
this is one of my all-time favorite songs. You got to hear this live. Your mind.
When I saw them live opening up for Kiss in 92, this was the song that really grabbed me.
Yeah.
And this is a song called Rock Me, which you've probably heard, but here's a little taste of that.
Listen to the Decibel Geek podcast on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones with Stitcher. Stitcher's smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Hi, this is Alf, and you're listening to the Decibel Geek podcast.
Rock on, Willie!
Did you see the latest Nintendo newsletter?
Whoa, nice graphics. I'd like to get my hands on that game.
You mean you haven't played it yet? We can play it on my Nintendo Entertainment System.
It's The Legend of Zelda, and it's really rad. Those...
Whatever it is, whatever it was, chocolatey chocolate.
Whatchamacallit,
how's it go?
Wowzamadoo, chew gooey caramel.
You son of a bitch. You Rickrolled me.
Yep.
Damn it.
Well, we're talking
about... I can't believe you did that.
We're talking about 1987. Of course I Rickrolled you.
Bullshit.
That was the year of Rick Astley.
Don't ever Rickroll me again. I hate that shit.
Did you... I'm going to tell you something that's going to give you a different perspective on that song.
No.
Do you know who Rick Astley Astley's manager was back then?
I absolutely know nothing about Rick Astley.
C.K. Lent, who wrote Kiss and Sell.
Really?
Yes.
Well, there you go. I now know one thing about Rick Astley other than I hate to be Rickrolled.
Well, if you don't know, that song was Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah.
It was a huge song in 1987, but it's probably more popular now than it used to be.
Yeah, it's one of them songs that, you know, like many of the polished poppy songs, you know, the Michael Jacksons, the Whitney Houstons and all that, these big hit singles, well, just turn on your TV. It's bound to come up in a commercial eventually.
Do you know his first eight singles reached the top 10 in the UK? And by retirement in 1993, he had sold approximately 40 million records worldwide.
Wow.
So there's lots of bad taste out there.
There's a lot of people buying a lot of bad albums in 87.
Yep. And we're going to wrap up things with July and a couple news stories from July. A lot of people think that the first... joint concert with the U.S. and Soviet Union in Moscow was the one with Motley Crue and Gorky Park, and I think Skid Row played on that. I don't know if Skid Row.
Yes, Skid Row was on there. It was Crue, Skid Row. I think Whitesnake was on there too.
There was a lot of American bands. Scorpions played it too.
Wasn't Ozzy on there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the first one. The first one was in 1987 on July 4th with the Doobie Brothers, James Taylor, Santana, and Bonnie Raitt. Not quite as hard-edged of a lineup.
Well, no wonder nobody ever thinks of that one. When you think of the first Moscow Peace Festival, you want to think of the one with all the good bands.
Yeah, you do. my favorite album of the year was released in 1987 was by Guns N' Roses.
One of the greatest albums of all time.
Appetite for Destruction.
Love that album. I mean, there's not a bad song on it.
This album came out in the face of all of the glam rock, which I like some of that stuff, but right. I was mentioning how White Lion didn't hold up. This is something that I think 30, 40 years from now, this album will still hold up.
Oh, yeah. Our great-grandkids will still be listening to this stuff, I hope, for their sake.
It was huge. I mean, I'll never forget the first time I saw the Welcome to the Jungle video. It was like watching men from another planet show up. It was really different. I mean, and I have to admit, when I saw it, though, I was like, it was great, but I never expected that to reach, you know, worldwide superstardom.
Yeah, the thing for me with Guns N' Roses was that, you know, I was a fan of a lot of bands that were already established at this time. And for me, you know, there's something to be said, you know, and it may be the same sort of kind of, I mean, not talent-wise,
right.
But as far as people, you know, average people embracing your favorite band, sometimes that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of like the Nickelback thing. Maybe, or it's because they're so popular and so accepted that they're not special, you know? It's just another, you know, mass-produced thing.
Yeah.
You know, and Guns N' Roses kind of seemed like that at first, but they sure weren't.
No.
You know, these guys went against the grain in every way possible, but yet they were still so embraced, you know, that album just went skyrocket for them.
Yeah.
But it didn't go, it wasn't overnight, you know.
Oh,
it
no.
took a little while it's for a, it
yeah.
to build up.
It had initial slow sales.
And by that time, you know, then all of a sudden it blows up, and now everybody's wearing Guns N' Roses t-shirts, yeah. You know. And this is the thing where a buddy of mine had turned me onto it and is like, well, this is cool, you know, I really like this. You want to embrace it as your own.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden it becomes everybody else's,
right.
You know. And then it kind of turned me off to it at first. But, you know, the music speaks for it. You can't hate Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction, no matter how hard you try.
Best-selling debut album of all time. 18 million copies in the U.S. alone.
That stands to this day?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. It's still the biggest one. Well, according to Wikipedia, it does, so yeah. Who knows. But it was hard to choose a song off of here because, I mean, they're all great. And which, you know, a lot of them you've already heard on the radio. This is one, I think this one kicked off side two, back when there was a side two on an album.
On a cassette and an album, yeah.
And I'm glad you picked this song because this is actually the name of my wife. Although, thank God she doesn't live a lifestyle like the one in this song. This is My Michelle. Dig it.
You gotta love it, man. You gotta love it.
Down, dirty, great riff.
You know, it's
great
one of those things where, you know, earlier in the year, I guess, everybody was so amped up for Guns N' Roses maybe getting back together at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame deal. But,
yeah.
You know, listening to that, it's maybe better that they don't get back together because it'll never, ever be as good as that.
Yeah, you think it would diminish the legacy possibly?
I just don't think it would be as good. You know, every time you talk about Guns N' Roses, the conversation is going to go to, man, but Appetite for Destruction was sure killer.
Yeah.
You know, no matter anything else about them, all the wishy-washy,
yeah.
You know, bullshit that they've done over the years, all the goofy stuff between Axl and the rest of the band. Well, Appetite for Destruction sure was a killer album.
It was. And, you know, produced, I think it was by Mike Klink and... rumored to be produced by Paul Stanley initially, but Paul apparently met them at an apartment and was so disgusted by how much of burnouts they were
right.
that he wanted nothing to do with it. I'm sure he regrets that to this day.
He felt dirty looking at him. But then again, you know, what if Paul Stanley would have produced it?
It would have sounded a lot different.
At that time, you know, 87, you know, he would have said, hey, I know this guy. You could get him to come in and play keyboards for you.
Yeah.
You know, and that would have ruined it.
Axl, meet my friend Desmond Child.
Right. No. Yeah. Keep those guys as far away from each other as possible.
Well, a good glam group Not, I'd say glam, but kind of
like a sleaze rock kind of glam rock.
Was Faster Pussycat.
Kind of little metal mixed in. You know, these guys kind of went all over the place. And personally, one of my all-time favorite bands. And, you know, again, 87 was a special year for some really good bands coming out with stuff, as we just talked about with Guns N' Roses. This one, well, it didn't sell quite as many as Appetite for Destruction.
The next one did better.
But this one was still really good, too. Talking about the debut of Faster Pussycat.
Tame Me Down, Greg Steele, Brent Muscat, Eric Stacey, and Mark Michaels on the drums. You know, as we heard a little bit about Faster Pussycat, Tame Me Down was Ricky Rackman's roommate back in the day, and, you know, they were featured on The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2 of the Metal Years with Ricky from the Cat House. They wrote a song called The Cat House.
Yeah. Off this album.
And there's also Bathroom Wall on the album, but you picked an interesting song off of here. Why'd you pick this one?
I picked this song because it's my favorite off the album.
It is?
Yeah, that's basically the only reason I picked it. I love all the songs on this album. This one of them that I can stick in and listen to the whole thing and just love it. You know, yeah. I just think it's killer. But I do that with any Faster Pussycat album because, well, I just really like Faster Pussycat. So crank this one up. It's Smash Alley off their 87 debut. Now, hopefully, we made a good impression on Ricky Rackman. Maybe he can pass on the word, get us Tame Me Down to come on the show.
That'd be a fun interview.
That would be
fun. I'm sure that guy's got some stories.
I'm sure. And some great music over the years to talk about. Those guys are still around kicking.
Still around.
And, you know,
Just played Sturgis.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Love that album.
Well, God released an album in July of 87.
He sure did.
Dio released Dream Evil.
Dream Evil, that's a good album, too.
Very good album. And before we're going to get one more song to play out on, but we want to make a couple of quick notes. You know, this has been fun, and, you know, we're going to come back next week, and we're going to do the rest of the year. We're about halfway through the year now. Born in 1987, Kesha, Aaron Carter, and Snooki. And for that, I say, fuck you, 1987.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Didn't give us nothing good, did you?
Not really on that one, jeez. But Fraley's Comet released an album.
You know, in 87, that was, like, that was probably the highlight of everything for me in 87.
Yeah.
Because, you know, back in those times, believe it or not, children, you know, in the land of cassettes, there was no internet. You know, you didn't have quick, easy access to information. So, you know, I, being a younger kid, didn't really know what was going on with Kiss. Didn't really realize that, you know, wasn't able to keep up with things that were going on. All I knew was Ace Frehley wasn't in the band no more, and it sucked, you know, because Ace Frehley was my favorite, you know, and I always love Ace Frehley stuff. And, you know, it's like, well, where did the guy go? Where did he go? Why ain't he putting out with nothing new? I remember being a kid, and I'd go into the music store, and every time I'd go into the Camelot Music or whatever it was, I'd go down and I'd flip through the A's and I'd flip through the F's, and still nothing from Ace Frehley until one day. There was an Ace Frehley album in there, and I couldn't believe it. I flipped out, you know, and I, like, this was one of the moments as a kid where you actually do get down on your hands and knees in front of your parents and say, please, you know, I've got to have this. Please let me have it. And luckily for me, my parents were nice enough to pay me an allowance, and I got it. And I was able to get it.
What was your reaction to hearing it the first time?
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I hated Todd Howarth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't like
too
that.
I didn't like that, Todd.
You know, to me, it's like if it's an Ace Frehley album,
yeah.
You know, nobody else should be singing on it. You know, and I understand that Ace Frehley, you know, wasn't really, even at this point, that comfortable with his vocals, you know, I guess, and wanted to have that extra, that Paul Stanley-type person around in the band and everything, but... You know what? He really didn't need it. And, you know, what the people wanted was Ace Frehley. They wanted another Ace Frehley solo album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the most part, there's some great songs on here. I mean, Rock Soldiers was a, you know, I guess a minor hit. I wouldn't call it a huge hit or
Into
nothing.
Into the Night,
you know?
Did okay.
Into the Night was a good song.
It
had a cool video and everything for it.
We Got Your Rock was a cool song.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on there. You know, I've got one that I'm going to play. We're going to play out the show with it.
Yep.
Just it's a backtrack. You know, it's probably not nothing you've ever maybe heard before if you're a Kiss fan or an Ace Frehley fan. But before we get into that, I guess we're going to wrap it up for this week. You know, this has been 1987 Part 1.
Part 1.
We're partway through the year. We've got more stuff coming up. Don't forget, check us out, www.dbgeekshow.blogspot.com.
He's a pro.
Shazam.
He's got it down.
I got it.
I'm going to change the website name just to fuck with him.
And then I'm going to Rickroll him.
Okay. So we're going to head out with Stranger in a Strange Land.
Stranger in a Strange Land off of 1987's Fraley's Comet. This has been the Decibel Geek Podcast. We love you guys. We'll see you right back here next week for part two.
Check us out at dbgeekshow.blogspot.com, facebook.com/decibelgeek, and Twitter at decibelgeekpod. Also available for free on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.